Here are four principles for living like an American. Protect freedom. Take responsibility at all times. Express gratitude for every gift and opportunity. Become a source of love. Once again, these are the times that try our souls. We must find the strength and the courage to rise up to refound America in the spirit of liberty. Welcome, my wonderful, wonderful audience. As always, I feel honored and grateful and pleased to be talking to you every week. You know, this is real TV, right here on TV. It's very real. It's on Roku. So I actually have a TV show, and you're really watching a TV show. And if you don't like watching it this way, just turn on your TV and go to Roku and you'll find it, and you'll find a lot of other enormously good people on Brighteon TV. Just a tremendous setup here. Those of you listening to it on the radio, you're listening to PRN.FM. And again, just thank you for being here. Thank you for taking our stuff seriously. We have a great guest today. But first, I'll introduce her, and she'll be on the screen if she's not on now. And I just again want to show appreciation for you being out there. Well, welcome again to Refounding America, Reclaiming Ourselves. I'm Peter Breggin, and my guest whom you're looking at is Karen Sigmund. Karen is really an interesting person. I've had her on one of our other shows with Ginger, and we just had a wonderful time. She may get into some interesting things today that I'm inviting her to talk about. I want to go through her her education. It's interesting. She is has an applied math degree that gives her an IQ of probably 20 points higher than mine. She then has a master's in international relations, which I think is incongruous. I don't know how anybody can have those two degrees. And then she got a PhD in education and American culture.
Yeah.
So it'd be interesting to talk about these changing interests. One of the things I want to talk about more today is that Karen spent 20 years as a sonar scientist, anti-Russian submarine sonar scientist, doing drills and keeping America safe. And she has some interesting thoughts about that and about women in the service. Before going on with that, Karen, why don't you talk a little bit about your upcoming conference for the American Freedom Alliance in LA?
Yeah. Great, thank you. I'm glad to be here, really. Thank you for taking the time, and it's really an honor to be on your show, and it was great being on with you and Ginger, too. The American Freedom Alliance is a nonprofit organization in Los Angeles. One of the things that we do in pursuit of protecting, preserving, fighting back for freedom in this country and really defending Western civilization, we hold conferences that are on all different scales and scopes. And we had one in June that was on propaganda, how the messaging has coerced us. The puppet masters that be are using propaganda, the media and schools and everything for very unified messaging that's created the kind of compliance that we've seen throughout COVID, but not just COVID. And this conference, we have a conference coming up October 1 and 2, that's about who those puppet masters are. Their messaging has been far too united for it to be sort of randomly coincidental. you know, not just within the United States, but literally globally. And we are going to paint the picture for our attendees, and then with our videos that come later, how it is and who are the master, the puppet masters, the one with the holding the strings that are, that have taken control and have really subverted, we can talk about this more, subverted elected governance. It's not happening anymore. Representative government, we're losing. It doesn't seem like it, but truly we are. So conferences.
Go ahead.
Right. Representative government is what we.
Oh wait, treasure. You left out something incredibly important.
Did I?
Yes. Would you hold a conference like that without inviting me?
Right. I'm getting right. Well, right. Of course we wouldn't. We wouldn't agree with. And Dr. Breggin will be joining us as one of our key speakers. It's a two-day conference. We have a phenomenal lineup, including Dr. Breggin, and we are extremely excited about that. One of the reasons we really didn't want this to be all about COVID, but COVID was sort of where the iceberg of all this globalism sort of peaked up above the sea, where we got to notice, back to, you know, ocean metaphors, where we noticed what was going on. And not many people who have been in the freedom movement that grew out of the whole COVID nightmare recognize that it's a much bigger thing than just COVID. And so, Dr. Breggin, you're one of the very few who did the deep dives as to why is this happening? And so that's why it's really important. The conference itself is not all about COVID. It's about the puppet masters.
But that's
what
good.
You bring is how they're co-joined and how they, COVID really is what woke people up to looking behind.
Well, the scenes. And we're going far beyond that now, Ginger and I. We've got a new book, which we hope will be much shorter. And trying to help people understand the whole globalist phenomenon and what it's about and how unique is it or isn't it? How far back does this kind of thing go? And it, you know, it turns out that empire building goes back to BC, you know, goes back to very, very early times. Within a few thousand years of the dawn of civilization, there are people building empires and killing other people and storming their villages and so on and so forth. So this empire building thing was just surprising to me. It's really deep in the American, in the human experience.
Well, it is part, I'm so glad you said about the human experience, because really, as long as there have been humans, there's always been a will to power. And I think there's been far less time over the course of the human experience on Earth where people haven't been engaged in that. I don't even know if there's ever been a moment where somewhere,
I can tell you about people, that. Should I do it now or do you want to wait until the conference?
No, I'd love to hear.
Well, for the first, no, it's actually a fairly new phenomenon in human existence. Not the will to power, but the ability to inflict it on anybody.
Yeah.
Because for the first couple million years, say growing up from little creatures and trees, living in families, we then have a million or so years development toward Homo sapiens. And during that period, which is until about 100,000 years ago, really only 50,000 years ago, we were like we are today. But during that period of time, we were hunter-gatherers. And it's very hard, if people are hunter-gatherers, to dominate them in your own group. So, I mean, what's going to happen? You know, old dad's going to decide he's the bully of the group, or some big guy's going to be the bully of the group. Well, everybody's got their own weapons. There's no Second Amendment. You just own your
right.
weapons and try to take them away from me. And the women are making their, everybody's making their own clothing. Men made a lot of their own clothing and women are gathering. So it's only 10,000 BC that we get the villages developing. And that's the beginning of civilization as we think of it, where people are staying put. They're living together with other people. They're farming and they're raising a few kinds of creatures. And they do this for safety, most likely, and to protect each other, and to have, probably more than anything, a regular food supply, because they had learned to grow wheat, a form of wheat way back then. And within a thousand or so years of that beginning development, 10,000 years ago, there's evidence that the towns are building walls. Then there are battles. And then there is a development of empires. Some of the earliest were in India and China, 400-500 BC. The best we can think of them, they were actually totalitarian places that tried to control everything. And there were some in the very early cradle of civilization that fought among themselves in the Middle East. And that's really the beginning of the human domination of other humans, as far as we can tell. There's very little in the way of one tribe, well, there weren't tribes really, these hunter-gatherers. Tribes are more the beginning of civilization. The hunter-gatherers rarely seem to attack each other, and there's actually only evidence of one slaughter that appears to happen in Africa of a group where they are beaten and hurt and killed. And nobody knows what it was about, and it was just about at the dawn of civilization, so maybe the archaeologists just missed the fact that there were some villages around, I don't know. And it's the same thing with monkeys. You know, monkeys will occasionally maraud against each other, but I think it's probably because their space is limited by human beings. So Jane Goodall's chimps were on an island, and I think they were on an island, but they didn't have infinite expansiveness. And out of the blue, one day, the dominant group is attacking a breakoff group and slaughtering it. So, you know, that's a brief history that I might possibly give at your conference, reducing my mighty study of the last. God, I've been studying. Karen, I've been studying like you have, I'm sure, things I never dreamed of studying. Well, you especially, you're in sonar for 20 years.
Yeah, that was.
You want to talk about what it was like for a woman to be doing that? You made some comments to me that I think would be really interesting.
Yeah, but let me just say first, though, I thank you so much for that description of sort of the evolution of from beginning to kind of, I guess, war fighting, really. I don't usually think that far back, so I shouldn't have been so hyperbolic in my framing of this, but really, that's really great. It's important to have this in context. Yes,
thank you.
Worked in, and I know what you mean about winding up learning things you never thought you would. I was a applied math major at university, which already not many women were in, and it was my goal was, how do I get out of college as quickly and painlessly as possible? And for me, that was math. But I think back, you know, to when I was a little kid and being a tomboy and being good at math and wanting to, I played handball with the boys and stuff. Just as a quick aside, I think if I were a kid now, or if there's a little kid who has the same kind of profile as me, they would have been badgering me and my parents to have me undergo all the whole trans thing. And this is really a horror, because that was never it at all. I just had more tendencies to like the things that boys liked that didn't make me like a boy. So the whole trans thing, I find it a terrifying aspect of, yes, of what's going on. So I, you know, in school, I was always math, and then I was math in college, became a scientist in the field of underwater acoustics, which is how sound travels underwater, and nobody really cares about that except during the 80s when we were fighting against the Soviets and they had submarines and we had submarines. So on the one side, you want your own submarines to be as quiet as possible, and we had people who did that. And the side that I was on is, now that their submarines are being as quiet as possible, how do we find them? And I worked at Bolt, Brannick & Newman, which incidentally is where the internet was born, not by Al Gore, but I worked at BB Analytics, and we did in fact develop the internet. So I helped develop develop new sonar systems. We were doing the science behind it. We were hypothesizing. We got money from the government, from DARPA, exploring all these different ways of finding them. And then I was lucky to be one of the people who went to sea on ships, on contractor ships and on Navy vessels to build and test these systems. And what we had talked about before, at the time, I was a kid. I was 23, at that age, starting at 23. And I went on these ships, and it was a big battle for them to let me go on. Women were not on combatant ships, and women were not even mostly on the research vessels I was on. So it was a big to-do, and I was going to be allowed to do it. I was the right person for the job. I didn't ask for any kinds of concessions or anything. I was just going to do this thing. I was the right person. And a lot of these decisions went all the way up to, you know, very high levels in the Pentagon. And I went to sea, and I never caused trouble. I didn't ask for any, you know, anything. But in looking back, as one of the first women, maybe these folks, but certainly one of the first women on combatant ships, couple things. For one, I learned unbelievable respect for what these men did and do. And also, I saw that my very presence, no matter how I diminished my own self in that realm, and most women don't diminish themselves in that realm, I'm an impediment. Women are an impediment in this. If this is war fighting, these are warriors, and they should not be thinking about making concessions. They did things that I wasn't able to do. Looking back now, I actually went to visit one of the ships I was on, and it was about a third women. And I apologize for the role that I played. And at the time when I was on board, I thought, Karen, you're not just doing this for you. You're not even just doing this for the country. You're doing this for all women, because whatever you do is going to be held up as, like it or not, you're representative of all womankind. And it was a burden, but I took it seriously. And then lo and behold, look at all the women on combatants. And so I am sorry, because I just don't think, right, looking back, I think men should be war fighters. Women should have a different role. I think it muddles everything up, and I am sorry.
Wow. You may get more blowback on this than any of the larger, in some ways, issues of world domination. Yeah.
You know, when you go to sea, here's the thing. You're on a ship with 500 men. And the women, they're the wives of these sailors, need to know that when their men go to sea, they're doing their warfighting thing. The women stay at home with their families, with their children. They keep their home fires burning. They do all that stuff. And the men, they need to know that where their men are, it's war fighting, they are warriors, but not that there's also women on. It creates, there's an intimacy that just happens when you're on a ship, because you're on a ship, and you're just all sort of in this thing together. I don't think that's right. Those women, those wives, should not have to give a moment's thought to their husbands at all.
So partly you're thinking of the natural sexual feelings that get aroused.
That is correct.
And those are, they're a real part of us. And I imagine for sure that could be disruptive.
Yes. And I'm worried about the natural tendency of jealousy for the wives. Mm-hmm. That they should not have to worry about that. And no matter how strong people are, you're still going to have a worry. And look what happened. They let women be at sea, and they were all getting pregnant. You know, that's not a spontaneous thing that just happens. So
they're getting pregnant without being married.
Weird, huh? Go figure.
Yeah, but you're saying they're getting pregnant on the ship by the sailors, and it's an out of wedlock.
That is correct.
And that's common on the ships?
It's from what I've read subsequently, because remember, I was one of the first, it wasn't when I was there, but the statistics of after they let women be on board these ships, the women sailors were getting pregnant, and by the men, they're not married, they wouldn't do that, by men who were often married to somebody else. It is, as you said, this kind of sexual tension or whatever in proximity and away from the world, it's going to breed something. And for the wives and for the men, again, the men are war fighters, and that should be the thing that they're thinking about, and thinking about their wives at home and their children at home, and the wives and children at home should be thinking about daddy, and daddy is keeping us safe, period. So
this is fascinating. May we talk a little more about it? I mean, folks, this woman is a world expert on globalism, and but you can go to our show that Ginger and I did with her on America Out Loud, and find our show. It's America Out Loud Pulse. This is a series of shows, and we do ours Thursday evening, so you should be able to find us pretty easily. But it's radio. And it goes on at 5 o'clock. But we will get back and talk about globalism. But this is the first time I've been able to have this kind of conversation with a woman who's been in the warrior setting in any depth. And I think this could be one of the more interesting and important informations. I would think that if I were on a ship with women, one of the changes in me would be I would feel more protective toward the women. Is that an issue?
I think it can go both ways, or multiple ways. Certainly more protective, which again, detracts from their war fighting.
Yeah.
They should be focused on the war fighting, not worrying about me. And again, I know in large part, I am different. Like a lot of women trailblazers, they are all about, look at me, and I demand this and I demand that. And you need to lower the standards. You need to take care of me. You need to do this. You need to do that. So I was not that at all. On the contrary. But I do know a lot of women, when they do this glass ceiling breaking, make a lot of demands. And that is how it lowers things. So not only are they asking to be protected, or maybe they're not asking to be protected, they still do want sort of different conditions. I did find them being, some were very kind and gentle and wonderful and protective, which was lovely. Others were resentful, which I understand in retrospect. I'm on board, but their wife isn't on board, or I'm on board and that just, you know, it's a men's club. It's a men's club, and all of a sudden they're having to change their language. They're having to maybe wear shirts where they might not wear shirts. They're just having to behave in a different way, which we want men to do. We want men to be protective. We want men to be chivalrous. We want men to watch their language. We want that. But that was their space where they didn't have to. So I invaded that space where they didn't have to. And I don't want them to have to be chivalrous there. And I don't want to break their habits of chivalry by saying, oh, don't worry about me.
We have just zipped through the first segment. We have two segments. We have 9 seconds, 8 seconds. So we're listening to Karen Sigmund. She is amazing. We will talk about global problems when we return. Well, welcome back, my wonderful audience. We've just had, for me, one of my more interesting segments with anyone, with Karen Sigmund talking really from the heart about what it was like to break the glass ceiling. If you missed that and you're just tuning in, you really ought to go back and listen to what it was like to break the glass ceiling on warships. and to learn that she doesn't think it's a good idea. The men need to have their attention on each other and on the men's club and the men's morale and on fighting. And it's very, very interesting. And you haven't told
needs a place.
Well, I think, you know, I can't see how it would be otherwise. I mean, certainly women can do things in the army. And you mentioned to me during the break that you didn't find that the work you were doing with computers, you know, got in the way of you didn't need the extra muscle. But if women are going to be warriors out in the sands of a desert and so on, I think that would, a lot of issues would be raised, since there is a great disparity in general between the strength of men and women. So, but who knows? I mean, it's all complicated stuff. Thank you for that. Where would you like to begin talking about, we started with your conference and about globalism. When did you begin to realize that you had a really deep interest in something pretty scary like globalism?
Yeah, I truly 2 years ago, when people started talking to me about the World Economic Forum, I just poo-pooed it. I said, oh, that's nothing, you know, you're talking nonsense, and that's not where the power is, and they're not elected, and they're not even really behind corporations, and that's ridiculous. So again, the lockdown and COVID, and mostly the COVID response, revealed what all had been going on. Now, as you had mentioned, I have a degree in international relations, and so diplomacy and war fighting and how countries manage their politics and how they work with one another and how wars happen and how they end and geostrategic alliances and how the world is composed. But all of that that I learned at that time, and really up until about 2 years ago, I had the sense of it was all about nations, one nation against another nation, or maybe we're talking tribes or maybe alliances. World War I was just one, you know, one marble fell and then they all go. World War II, same thing. You just pull on a thread, but it's nations. It's all at the national level and then they ally. And I always thought that that's sort of how it was. And then I knew about the European Union was created. Master's thesis was on the European Union. So they're banding together in large part, you know, to compete against the United States and to form against the Soviet Union and so on. Again, alliances, but it's a supranational organization. The United Nations created as a supranational organization, but nobody's trying to subvert national sovereignty. So that's all very interesting, and that's kind of history as usual. But then you realize the EU is trying to erase borders. They've erased actual physical borders. You can travel within the European Union without crossing a frontier of any kind, unlike how it used to be. They're trying to do all these things, and that's great and wonderful. And you can sort of understand on the one side that having had armies cross this way and that way and the other way, and Germany has got to be controlled somehow, and they didn't manage it after World War One and maybe after World War Two, so we're going to be allies and create peace that way. Same with the United Nations. That seems all well and good, but then you really realize that countries, nations, are ceding their sovereignty to these other entities. I always thought, okay, that's the United Nations. But what did we learn during COVID? It's the World Health Organization. It's China. It's the World Bank. It's one, and let's not forget the granddaddy of them all. It's the World Economic Forum that is starting to pull these strings to such an extent that representative government isn't representative anymore. Government is more responsive to these other supranational globalist entities. They are globalist puppet masters. And we can go to the polls, and let's assume just for a minute that we have legitimate elections. Let's just posit that sort of for fun, that we have real elections that aren't full of fraud, just, you know, for grins. even so, so many of our elected officials are not feeling accountable to those who elect them, but to another entity, for example, Klaus Schwab's World Economic Forum. And that's not just the United States. Every single country around the globe that had a totalitarian response, those leaders of those nations were part of Klaus Schwab's Young Leaders Institute, or whatever it's called. They are part of the World Economic Forum's globalist elite, trained to be globalists. They marched in lockstep, and that's Australia, New Zealand, France, Canada, parts of the United States, Italy, so many of these countries that were shocking, especially the Anglosphere, all, you know, English-speaking countries that we think of as being so freedom-oriented. Not. They were utterly draconian, and that response came from a single place. So it really was, I'd always been aware of the supranational organizations like the United Nations. They were trying to keep the peace in the world, which, you know, is also garbage. But it was the COVID response that, first of all, how we're still not blaming China, and how the media just stomped instantaneously on the idea that it was from China, that it was from a lab, it wasn't a spontaneous thing from fast food. You can tell how seriously they take a particular point by how the instantaneity and completeness of their response to saying any such thing, and then the uniformity of it. And that's when I started to think, there's a lot more. They're not just reading the New York Times and getting their message. Everyone gets their message from the New York Times. The New York Times also gets their message from up here. And so there are puppet masters. They are pulling the strings. And it's terrifying, because it's not only at the national level. It's not only at the presidential executive level. It's not only at the governor level or the attorney general level, like Soros. I mean, it's all of that. But it's also really far down at the local, at your zoning board level, at the zoning commission of your little town that you think your little happy people deciding about, do we have one lane or two, and traffic calming, and what kind of signage. I sound crazy. They are everywhere. And that's what, so World Economic Forum, the globalist puppet masters, and they use the United Nations Agenda 21 and Agenda 2030 that the United States has been a signatory to. They are percolating it down to every level, and it is every. And it's on the back of two globalist ideas. They have to be globalist, because otherwise it wouldn't work. One is the pandemic, right? If one country does one thing and another country does another thing, it's still going to spread because there's travel. So a pandemic needs a global response, which is why the WHO got so involved, and we're still under threat from the WHO, taking away sovereignty. This happened a couple of months ago. And the other one is the environment. So we have been screaming about climate change, you know, the left has, climate change, we need to have these draconian, you know, stop emissions and all this stuff. Why does it have to be globalist? Because if one country does it, another one doesn't, the planet's still going to die. So these are the two things that they can make the argument that they have to be global. Those two things. And they've never let up. They took a respite from climate change to pivot to this. As soon as the pandemic was over, or was considered sufficiently to be over, and they didn't have to talk about it 24/7, then we went back to climate.
Well, they went back to other things too. They got the war going in the Ukraine.
And Ukraine, yes.
And if, as you mentioned earlier, they got the. They started to now tool up the World Health Organization to take the sovereignty away from willing nations. If you want to learn about that, folks, on our website, me and Ginger, Bregan, simplybregan.com, right up at the top, there are two banners about very emergent things. Oh, thank you. And below one down, can you actually move that down to the next one? Biden handing over U.S. sovereignty to who?
Right.
Thank you, backup people there, rulers of the TV studio. Biden handing over U.S. sovereignty to who? That'll give you a lot of data on that huge threat that we have thwarted. A lot of folks put a lot of time into trying to thwart some of that, but we've
so far
just slowed them down a little bit, and they are going to roaring back because and they're going to include climate change in the World Health Organization because, after all, climate change affects people, health, you know, and all these other things. And human health is but one of three healths. You know, that's one health means that it isn't one human health. It's one pie, piece of the pie is human health. One piece of the pie is environmental health. One piece of the pie is animal health. We're just kind of equal to those three. And in fact, that's not possible. If you put humans in that situation, you're trying to crush them.
Okay.
So that you're trying to crush them. Now, you weren't intending to say that the pandemic was a real threat or that the environmental change was necessarily a real threat, were you?
Absolutely. They are not. They never were. The real threats are the response. I never thought, were useful, you know, never let a crisis go to waste. They were useful vehicles for the agenda, and I never thought the pandemic was never, maybe 2 weeks. I gave them 2 weeks when it looked like everyone in Italy was dying and China. Okay, fine. But after 2 weeks, we knew what the real statistics were out of Italy. We also knew within 2 weeks there was hydroxychloroquine. Ivermectin, to my recollection, came later. We knew that was zinc. We knew you had vitamin D. We knew all these treatments. And so that was part of recognizing the utter deceit and the fact that there are three classes of deaths during this nightmare that they've visited upon us. One are the literal COVID deaths. Every single one of those could have been avoided. Again, maybe not the first 2 weeks, but everyone, because we knew the treatments, we knew prophylaxis, and none of those treatments had to do with ventilators. None of them had to do with social distancing. None of them had to do with masks. There were other treatments. We know weight was an issue. We knew vitamin D was an issue. I think iodine I've heard tossed about. If you took a lot of zinc, D, you were going to be pretty much fine, but that they chose to lock us in our, so that was one class of deaths and injury. The other one is of sicknesses and injuries and so on that went undetected because people didn't go to the doctor, suicides, abuse, deep depression, alcohol, all those, loss of businesses, a lot of deaths and injury and destruction based on that. And that was straight up from the because of the pseudo response. And then the third one is vaccines. So three classes of death and injury came out of this, all preventable, all man created, and none of them were directly due to the virus. And this just makes me nuts. And if they had if public health actually had ever been their goal, the first thing they would have said was, it looks like there's some correlation with weight. So get out there and get your exercise. What did they do to my huge Santa Monica Mountain Preserve right here? Huge. There's a tiny little fence with a tiny little gate, and they locked the gate. I mean, this is just the most, they arrested people in the ocean. So obviously, it was so obvious that our health was not the thing that they were interested in.
Right.
If it were, everything that they did would have been different. Every single thing would have been different. And this is such a horror.
Yeah.
So there was a sickness, and when that study out of the UK came out, and you know, a third of us are going to die, as soon as we had data, they needed to change that. So no, that was, and nor do I think, I do think the climate changes. I think the climate is changing. I think the climate has always changed and it always will change. And I do not think humans have anything to do with it. It's tremendously hubristic to imagine that we could, just as it's hubristic to imagine that we can prevent all deaths. You're not going to prevent all deaths. And locking people up in their homes does not prevent all deaths. So this, in every way, and I haven't really used the word leftist yet, but these are all leftist utopian kinds of ideas and ideals that you can somehow legislate things, or just if totalitarianism, as you said in the very beginning.
Yeah, collectivist totalitarianism, and it's attracting both predatory progressives and predatory capitalists and predatory people with no ideology at all. In fact, most of them have no real ideology other than control. They want to sap the wealth and control the people as much as possible.
Isn't it
power?
So this conference, the Globalist Puppet Masters, my original subtitle was Who They Are and Why It Matters. But in the weeks since then, I'm not going to change the subtitle, but mentally, I think my subtitle is The War on Against the Human.
Yeah.
Because that really is exactly.
Mm-hmm. It's World War III against nations, against democracies more. Really, really, folks, it's one way of viewing it. You can look at it globally, and you've done a good job on that. And that is, it's a war on civilization. Another way to look at it is it's the war on all constitutional democracies, because even one big strong one, if the U.S. could survive, would stop the globalists, because they really don't have a lot going for them.
And that's one reason they had to take down Trump.
Exactly.
He was the bulwark against exactly.
Again, Mendt announced it. All this stuff is covered in detail in our book, COVID-19 and the Global Predators. It's so much more than about the global predators. It's about the globalists, COVID-19 and the global predators. And that part is more and more relevant now as we're watching this around the country. You can get that, folks. I don't say this enough. You can get that book from us directly at wearethepray.com. You can go on our, obviously, Bregan.com and get it. But wearethepray.com is dedicated for that. If you're in America, you can get it at a cut rate. And then it's on all the major big stores, you know, including good old Amazon. And then on Amazon, you can get the book. And then you can also get the ebook, very inexpensive, at $2.99. We wanted to make sure that that was just not going to, people could get to read the book, anybody. And you can also get the audiobook too. So we're roaring along. We're over 110,000 copies sold, which is amazing for a self-published.
Self-published.
But of course, we had to self-publish it, folks. There was no way we were going to get this book out in the frame we wanted it and the time we wanted it with the title we wanted and all those things that get under the control of other people. But it's not accurate to say it's self-published. It's Ginger Bregan published. She created some years ago to publish two of our books that were not intended for a huge audience. One of them is about me and my work, and the other is a book I wrote called "Wow, I'm an American" that nobody I knew in the business would, because I was working in New York, would publish. So we put them out ourselves. But she created a publishing house. So the pub we do wasn't exactly self-published. Ginger knew just what she was doing. She's a publisher. So she got everything arranged, and she got the printers, and she got the all the different things that go in it.
It's not easy.
No. So before we run out of time, we're not there yet. Well, we're getting close. Talk some about just getting in touch with you.
Yeah. Well, find me at AmericanFreedomAlliance.org, and you can reach me, Karen, at AmericanFreedomAlliance.org. By the way, one of the more hated names in these last several years, Karen. It's been extremely difficult. It's weird how hard it's been, but it has been. Also on our website, AmericanFreedomAlliance.org, you can read a little bit about, we had a Choose Freedom initiative where we were doing various activist-y things regarding mandates in Los Angeles. I, as you can probably tell just looking at me, I'm not a mandate kind of person. And so we fought the mandates and we had Choose Freedom stuff. But also on the website, you can read about our upcoming conference, which is going to be, it's 2 days, it's October 1 and 2. We have, obviously, Dr. Breggin. We have an incredible list. If you follow the globalist stuff going on, we have Patrick Wood, who's amazing.
Michael, oh, he's very good.
It's astounding. Michael O'Fallon, who speaks on sovereignty. Jakob Nordengard will be joining us from Sweden. He can't come into the United States being unclean like me. Dr. James Lindsay, who's astounding. Steve Coughlin, who's just an amazing national security guy who talks about this. John Klysik, about education. Guy Millière, who's going to talk about the European Union. Ed Dowd, which is absolutely tremendous, formerly of BlackRock. We're over the moon to have Ed Dowd. He's coming in from Hawaii to come speak to us. And then our pièce de résistance, we have Steve Bannon.
Oh, good. Good, good.
Yeah. That's new. That's very exciting.
I thought that was new. That's very exciting.
Yes, that's brand new. And so the more I work on this, the more I learn, the more I realize this is everything. Not only because it's that important, but it literally is everything. There is not a facet of our lives that is not touched by this.
Absolutely. 5 seconds left. Everything Joe Biden's doing isn't a mistake. It's all what the globalists want.